You're listening
to Welcome to Comics, episode number 292. This week, we talk about Wonder Woman, the true Amazon. Visit WelcomeToComics.com. Hear past episodes. See what we're reading next. Or send us feedback. This show is supported by listeners like you. Access bonus episodes by becoming a patron today at patreon.com/WelcomeToComics. And now, the cast begins.
Did you go to Norway to see Guardians 2?
I went to Norway to see a weird statue, but it turns out in Norway, or in Oslo, everything closes at 5 p.m. unless you want to go to a very expensive bar. Because food and drink there is insane in terms of cost. So we went to a movie theater, because everyone in that country speaks English, apparently, and they were just playing Guardians in English, and I loved it. It was so good, and yeah, I cried so hard. Okay, and we ended up watching Logan two nights ago. Like, we rented it on Amazon or whatever. And Grant and I didn't attach. And for me, I think it was like Hugh Jackman just couldn't carry the movie for me. And the girl was spectacular, but they didn't give her any speaking lines until like three quarters of the way through. Mm. So like at the end where she's like crying and they're burying Wolverine and she's like, daddy. I'm like, yeah, Yondu was his daddy. I'm like, still crying. I'm still sad over it.
Mary Poppins, y'all.
That was so good.
I just cannot express how much I enjoyed Guardians 2, so I'm very glad I saw it in theaters.
Yeah, like I said, I liked it better than the first one.
Yeah, I started rewatching the first one last night, like, because I hadn't seen it since the theatrical release, and I still really like it, but I remembered it having more jokes, and now I realize, like, the second one really nailed the humor in it. I thought they did a good job. But I think last week, David, you said that they didn't use the music, like, in the same way?
Oh, I said that.
Oh, you said, okay. Yeah, like, that is so true. It was...
I think what I said was that the soundtrack was not as good.
Yeah,
or you said you didn't like the soundtrack. It didn't mesh with the movie as well. I liked the soundtrack. Yeah. I definitely liked the soundtrack. Yeah. I just don't think it carried. I don't think it added to the movie in the same way that it did in the first one.
Yeah, my comment was that it felt more forced, and then the first time it felt like more like a natural part of the story.
Yeah.
Well, in the first one, they have a thing happening and the music is playing as part of the thing. And they did that like twice in the second one where it's like someone actually physically pushes play.
Yeah.
So, but I think doing that is superior, I guess. Like, I mean, it works really well when they do.
Yeah. I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah, I was a little worried, but I am very happy that I watched it, so hooray.
All right. You guys ready to talk about this week's comic?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
This week's comic.
All right. This is the first in our Wonder Woman 75 series. So last year, 2016, was the 75th anniversary of Wonder Woman's first appearance. So DC decided to come out with a bunch of awesome, really good Wonder Woman stories. And you could say they missed the boat by a couple months. It's May, and the Wonder Woman movie is coming out right now on the 76th year. So last year would have been awesome, but we got Wonder Woman stories and comics last year, and this year we're getting a Wonder Woman movie. So it's time for Wonder Woman, and look at that. We wrapped up our best of series just in time to talk about Wonder Woman as the movie's coming out. It's almost like we planned it.
Almost.
Almost. So the first thing we read was Wonder Woman, The True Amazon, written by Jill Thompson. So this comic is strictly a retelling of Wonder Woman's origin story. It ends, like, right as she's getting out of here. And I really appreciate that this is a new origin story that feels new, even though it's not so incredibly different. Because I think Wonder Woman is one of those characters who gets her origin story tweaked, but never changed. Just like, I mean, Batman doesn't get changed and Superman don't get changed, but a lot of these characters, they're Wonder Woman, like, a lot of these characters, their origin stories get totally changed, or retconned in major ways. And I think even, it happens sometimes with Batman that, like, I think in one of them, like, the Joker is the one who killed the parents, or the Joker is responsible in some way. Like, one of, you know, Joe Cool is one of Red Hood's gang members, and Red Hood ends up becoming, you know, something like that, where major ties are retconned in. But this feels different. This feels like a really fresh retelling of what could be a stale origin story in some people's eyes. But I appreciated that is just the origin story and doesn't have to be anything more than that.
Do you think that, or you said stale origin story. Do you think that origin stories get stale, or have you seen that kind of discussion, online or in person or wherever? Cause that seems like a really interesting thing to say, because to me, I feel like an origin story is the origin story. You know, why retell the origin story, for the sake of, I don't know, not because it's stale necessarily, but like, I understand why we get retellings of origin stories, but I feel like retelling it for that reason seems kind of, I don't know, that doesn't seem like a great reason to me.
Yeah, so maybe so when I say, I think it gotten more in my consciousness since the movies have been coming out, and like Spider-Man Homecoming is coming out, and I think this is the third retelling in just the movies of Spider-Man's origin.
But I don't think we're getting Spider-Man's origin story in this, because he's already Spider-Man.
Yeah, but I just, maybe this is a bad example. Like, in the, I feel like,
I think that is a bad example for this.
Okay. Superman is a good one, right? I feel like whenever and somebody does a new Superman, they retell the origin. And Grant Morrison, actually, does a really good job on All-Star Superman. He does it in a page. And he does it really minimally and really well. But at the same time, it's still Superman. I feel like whenever somebody takes on a new large project for one of the major characters, they feel like they have to start at the beginning and retell the origin, even if they change nothing, or even if they tweak only the smallest, tiniest bit, in a way that kind of matters to the character, but in the grand scheme of something like a 100-year history, doesn't really change much at all in the grand scope. I feel like this changes a lot about what Diana and Wonder Woman are, if this is the origin story for the character. This fundamentally changes Wonder Woman and her motives if she goes out into the world like this than if she goes out in the world because Steve Trevor. So I think that's what I mean. Like, this it feels fresh because it's not just a minor tweak. It's not a retelling for the sake of telling it again. And like, Superman is still Superman, but this time we're going to put him in a hoodie. Like, okay, who gives a shit? doesn't functionally change anything. Like, this fundamentally changes Diana's character in a way that doesn't change who she is, but changes her motives, which makes her feel like a new character. Did I explain it better that time?
Yes.
I gotcha.
Okay.
Because I guess what I thought you were saying is that the, like, I don't necessarily have a problem with getting a reminder of the origin every once in a while.
Yeah.
I think the problem with the movies is, you know, a movie is what, 2-3 hours at the most, and that can take up a large chunk. And, you know, especially if it's a well-known character, like you said, a lot of people know the origin story already, especially with Spider-Man, because, you know, how many times have we gotten Spider-Man's origin story in a movie? Not even assuming that we don't get that in Homecoming, which if we did, I wouldn't be surprised. But, I think if a piece of media comes out, whether it's a movie or a comic or, you know, a re-release or something, I think if the audience changes, or if it's a different audience than normal, I think it's acceptable to retell the origin story. I mean, in the movies, they're not telling the origin story for you and me, people who are familiar with the comics. They're telling it for people who are not familiar with the comics necessarily, but they want to give those people the background. So for us who are fans and or know it already, it seems like it's like wasted time potentially. But
what do you think of this one?
So this one, this one, I like this story. And I agree with Andy in that I like that Steve Trevor is removed, because I think having Wonder Woman, like, leave Themyscira to help Steve Trevor seems like, it doesn't necessarily seem like Diana's leaving Themyscira for her own reasons. This one is, this one, I think, seems more in line with mythology. Her impetus for leaving, I think, fits in the place where she's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's typical. I think we see heroes embarking on a hero's journey in an effort to, prove themselves to be, or to live up to their potential. Like, for example, Thor's comic book origin in Marvel is similar, right? Thor, had to live in the body of Donald Blake in order to learn the value, or to learn humility, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because he was like this cocky, you know, he was like Diana is in this comic, you know, he was the first son of the leader of this kingdom of powerful people. And he was like the most powerful. So, you know, he strutted around and, you know, act like an asshole, and he had to be knocked down a peg. And in that story, Odin does it himself. In this one, you know, Diana causes...
She does it to herself.
She does it to herself. But they both Thor and Wonder Woman, leave their home to learn to live up to their potential. They both know their... They already know their potential, right? Thor knows he's Thor, and he understands what it means, what being Thor is, at least on some level. Like, he knows he's a Norse god, or he's an Asgardian, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't think he understands what Thor is to other people. And so that's why he needs to learn, he understand what it's like to be the type of person that Thor is there to serve. I mean, Thor is like the guardian of Midgard, right? Or he's a champion of Midgard, or what, I forget exactly what the title is, but he, you know, he has to, it's his responsibility to protect humanity in some way. But if he doesn't understand why humanity needs protection, or what they need protection from, he can't necessarily protect them well, right? And I think with Diana, she is supposed to represent the best of the Amazonians. And from a you know, from a skill level, she is that, right? I mean, she's like the best archer and the best athlete and things like that. She can fly. She's super strong and stuff. But she doesn't know what it means to be, what that means to the rest of the Amazons. And, so I think that's why she has to like leave and learn her lesson, or because she doesn't realize that, it causes this tragedy. And so Hippolyta has to send her away because there has to be punishment, right? Mm-hmm. She might be the pinnacle of Amazons, but she's still an Amazon, and she, you know, she has to live in that world, and she's not above the law. So I don't know. There you go.
All right.
Is that like helpful? I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a very nice cohesive thought. That's why I had nothing to follow up with.
Okay.
Jen, what did you come away with this?
I think that it added a lot of depth and richness to the character. I also think it's really interesting that they made her dislikable at the start.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think a lot of the time you see, especially from like the old characters like Superman or Batman, like pre-gritification Batman specifically, Wonder Woman, there's kind of this sense that they're meant to be paragons. And Diana is that for her people, as David said. She is supposed to be like the best Amazon. But early comics explored what that meant in terms of like their adult adventures, but you know, they would save the kids and say, stay in school, don't do drugs, all that crap. Like, there was a lot of kind of social messaging behind early comics in a lot of ways, and that in the end makes for really boring characters when you bring it, you know, 50 years later. So I think that adding some level of shittiness to her actually is a really good thing for her character, because a lot of the origins we see are like, Diana was made and she was perfect and everyone loved her, and then she left to go to America and check out what other people were doing, right? Like, and that's not very flavorful, to be honest. Like, it's not interesting for a character. And it's hard for readers to relate when it's like, this person is so perfect. They are always perfect, and outside forces make them fail. Yeah. Because then it's like, okay, cool story, bro. But
but everybody can relate to spoiled brat.
Yeah, because if, like, some of this stuff, you're kind of like, well, she's a child. And there's some sympathy there, too, because if she's a baby and she's raised by these people, you know, they never scold her. Or if they do, it's really gentle. They say, like, you're so good, you're so great. So this kid is never reined in. No one ever says, like, don't freaking do that. No one teaches her how to develop, like, morality, which is a major parenting thing, right? And I think what's kind of interesting is they expect her to be the paragon, like, Amazon woman. You know, they're like, you represent us. But they don't teach her what that means. They're just like, we were at war, now we have peace, it's all good. And they forget that, you know, she doesn't have that burden of experience with her, that teaches her things like humility or value for life or respect for others.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of make the assumption that because she's like, you know, kind of the Amazon, like, oh, she'll just have these things. But it's shown again and again in her early life that no, she needs to be taught these things. And I think there's also something in there too that's just kind of like in the Cape Comics genre, there you get this like underrunning current of like teaching morality. you know, heroes do it to villains, the books do it for readers. And I like the idea here of, like, yes, even someone as great as Wonder Woman needs to be taught morality. That said, like, I recently read an article on, like, I guess there's, like, a small portion of the child population that has been diagnosed as psychopaths. And I had just read this article, and Diana, as, like, a little kid, fits the bill completely, except she doesn't, like, torture animals. Right? Like, she's just not quite mean enough. But I'm like, oh shit, this kid's scary. But I mean, at the same time, like, I like this version because you can tell she wants to be good. And I don't even know if she wants Alethea to love her just so everyone loves her. It's that she's never encountered someone who said no to her, and she needed that so badly in her life.
Yeah, it's a challenge that she hasn't conquered before. She's conquered everything else in her world except for that. The idea that somebody doesn't love her is just another challenge.
Yeah, and it's a valuable lesson. I mean, she learns it in the harshest way possible, but I think it is nice because she's so skilled and blah, 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 right? But she's kind of the everyman here, where it's like, you know, she has these things, but then she has to learn that not everyone is going to just love you for you, and that's okay. And you need to be nice to people, whether or not they do. And she does that. Like, you get the sense, too, that their friendship starts becoming, like, this really real friendship. You know, Alethea starts smiling when she comes by, and Diana starts, instead of just buying stuff and showering her with, like, material goods or services, she starts engaging. You know, she grooms the horses. She participates. And, like, you kind of get the sense that even before this, she's starting to learn, like, the value of what friendship is. And then it all goes horribly wrong.
Yeah. And I think that's a bit of the tragedy of what happens here, right? Like, she does this in the race because, like, she's coming to Alethea as just another challenge to be conquered. And you're right that at a certain point, Diana starts to actually engage and they start to build a real friendship. But that building happens slowly because this is a later in life challenge for Diana and she's just not quite there yet. But she's getting there. The problem is this fucking challenge comes up. And that's what does it, because Diana's not there yet to the point where she still needs to win this for her own vanity. She's learning, and you get that because in the earlier challenge, she's like, oh, I didn't know that there was an Amazon that can climb a wall as fast as me. I didn't know that there was somebody who could run almost as fast as me. She didn't consider the context that, yes, she's the best at everything, but there's somebody out there who's almost as good at her at everything. Like, this person's almost as good as me as running. This person's almost, like, she's the all-around A+, but there's a lot of other people there that get A's in the categories, too. And she learns that, and she's taking it to heart, but at the end of the day, she needs that vanity victory because she still hasn't conquered Alethea. Like, cause she's still looking at it as a challenge, and I don't think she overcame that at the end, which is why she had to do that. Like, if she could have, man, like, one more month, Diana, you would have been cool with coming in second, and it would have been fine, and you wouldn't have killed your goddamn friend.
Well, I kind of wonder, though, too, because, like, I think she would have learned a little humility, but it seems like she's not a person who really understood consequences either. But then you think, if it's a perfect island with a perfect day every day, and they, you know, do everything in the name of peace because they're never at war anymore, like, can you really learn? I mean, like, of course there's, like, consequence of, like, oh, you tip the chariots, the horses get hurt, and it's very bad, that kind of stuff. But in such a perfect society, is there anything there to, like, I guess, kind of temper her in terms of knowing that? Because can someone really just be told, like, oh, be good, and then understand what it means if they never see the negative consequences of their actions.
Yeah, and I think this also ties into what you were saying before about how they all kind of just believe that she has these values because she's an Amazon. Because all of these people, aside from being perfect, this whole area, this island being perfect and every day is a perfect day, these people learn these lessons long ago. Long time ago. They're ingrained in this culture to agree that they don't even think about it. And they all live it day to day. And all these people know those lessons. And it's so long ago now, maybe they don't remember having learned morality growing up. So for them, it's such an understood part of how the world works. Like, oh, the sky is blue. Oh, don't be a dick to your friends. You know, that not only do they not think to teach her, but it's taken for granted that morality is part of their world because they've never had to teach it to someone before. They've all just had it the entire time. I mean, at this point, it's been thousands of years. I think you're supposed to understand, that they've been on this island. Like, they ain't gonna know. They ain't gonna know. They're not even gonna think to teach it to her. Until now, like when you're talking about consequence, like, why even think about teaching her these kinds of consequences? Everybody knows. Everybody knows. But Diana doesn't.
Yeah.
So the other thing I think we can't get away without talking about, and the reason I put this one up front as an origin story, is Diana as a feminist character. And I think that's part of why I really, really like this comic. So Diana was created as a subversive feminist icon by William Marston. And he did it on the low low, cause the costume is still very, very, objectifying. But in the original comic, the idea, and I think you mentioned it this way in the beginning, Jen, that she leaves to save Steve, to save the man. Like, she goes off to save the world of men because men need saving by her. She needs to do this for them. So it was really subversive at the time, but, you know, make her sexy, you know, put in a little bit of S&M there with the lasso and nobody will notice. But the idea was subversive, that she needs to go out and save men. I like that this seems to take it one step further in that there doesn't need to be a man anywhere near Diana's origin story for her to have motivation, for her to be a complete character, for her to go out in the world and do good deeds. I like the idea that Steve needs saving and the gender reversal that's created there and how that flips the trope that you see in comics. But I like that this completely removes it. It seems like an evolution of what the character ought to be. I think that's what I appreciated most about this. And I really get that, like, at the end when you get the armoring of the hero. I was like, ah, yes, Diana's just Diana because she's a fucking badass. And she's just going to be a badass. She's going to go out in the world and be a badass the same way she was a badass when she was growing up beating shit up on the Mascara.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's really nice, too, that they kind of just, like, show it as, like, this is the character, this is the world she lives in, and it doesn't need to have that influence of, like, oh, she's got to save the men, and, I mean, like, I actually like Diana for that in a lot of ways, but at the same time, I think it paints a very whole picture of her as a person here, and I think, like, being able to just see someone in, like, this very simple context really shows who they are as a character, and I think that's really good. But yeah, like, what you said, Andy.
All right. So what did you guys think of the art in this? Let's do a little bit of discussion there, because this is a very specific style.
So good.
It works for you.
I opened up my Kindle and flipped to that first page and was just like, wow. Like, I was, like that first, like, establishing shot of, the island and the waves and the watercolor, it actually literally took my breath away a little. Like, I was just like, this is going to be a gorgeous book. I loved it. And I think it works too, like, in terms of the way it's told, it's a really simple story, right? There's no, like, subversive subplots and 18 things going on in the background and see next issue for blah, blah, blah. It's just, like, this is told like a children's story, and it's illustrated like a children's work, and it is just gorgeous. Like, it's simple in what it's showing us, but the details are, like, so carefully put in there. I loved it. Like, what did you think?
I really like it as well. I like that it feels storybook in some areas, and then in other areas, like, when I say it feels storybook, I'm thinking and actually looking at right now the pages where Hippolyta is on the beach singing. And that looks and feels so storybook, and just the way the music is carrying and the water gets still and all that, it's beautiful, and then the raindrops come down. But then there's other times where it's action and it's fighting and it's flowing, and like even down to the hair. There's also something about this that feels, and maybe it's just because it works really well, I don't know, but something about this feels like Greek influenced, the way that Diana is Greek influenced in her origin. Something about this feels Mediterranean too. I have no idea why I get that vibe. I think I'm just getting it maybe because of the content. Maybe it's the watercolor, maybe it's the kind of looseness but structure that's here. I don't know, but the vibe of it fits the character content too.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's bright. It's really bright.
Yeah, maybe color. Yeah, maybe the color. Is there a page that, like, stuck out to you, Jen?
Just that.
That first one?
First shot with the island, but also, where was it? One thing I noticed is that it got, like, it's very bright, and then after kind of that main point where Alethea dies and, you know, they're doing the cleanup. It shows Diana alone in, like, the bloody area, like, the square.
Oh, yeah.
With, you know, just, like, the remains, and she's crying. And it's super muted, like, compared to everything else. It's bloody, and there's, like, flowers, except there's kind of this, I don't know, like, tone shift over the whole thing. So it's not, like, happy red. It's, like almost like flashback color, and then it goes to black and white for the nighttime scene. Mm-hmm. And she's still sitting there, like, crying. I feel like just these little touches like that, where, like, the amount of, like, bright color is controlled a lot more. Like, these scenes are dominated more by, like, you know, the darkness of their clothing. Hippolyta and Diana, they're both wearing black at the time, and you know, their hair. God, it must have been hard to paint this hair, but it looks so amazing. But, like, it actually fills a lot of the panel and adds kind of this darker tone. So there's kind of, like, even something with such bright, happy colors, Jill Thompson tones it down appropriately to set mood. And I like that as well.
Yeah, yeah. I think that towards the end, especially, like you said, after Alethea dies, I think maybe it's just my imagination, but it seems like things that were very flowy before, like the clothing and the hair, seems like heavier. I mean, there's a couple scenes where afterwards where you still see like a flowing dress, but Hippolyta's clothes seem heavier, and everybody's hair is not like flowing the way it was before. So I think you're right that there definitely is a tone shift, beyond just the content of the story. And maybe it's subtle. Maybe it's my imagination. I don't know.
No, but I think I
agree with you that it's there.
I think I see what you're saying. Like, I'm looking right now at the page where, Hippolyta is holding Diana as Hippolyta has told her, like, there has to be some consequence, and I love you, but there has to be some consequence. And she's just holding her daughter. And it's a full page, and there's, like, drapes in the room, like, cloth hang from the ceiling, and it just, like, it sags down. And then there's cords and things that are just sagging down, and her dress falls and puddles. Like, there's definitely downward motion to the art after the death. It's not just your imagination.
I think the lines of the dress, you know how like in paintings or photographs, lines tend to draw the eye in a certain direction. All the lines, especially in this, on that full page that you mentioned, Andy, all the lines I think draw your eyes down.
Yeah. I hadn't noticed that part.
I think the way you described that her dress is like forming a puddle is a great observation, because it's like the lines go down and then they just like hit the floor and start to spread out, like water, you know, running down, mm-hmm. you know, just with falling or running down. Yeah, it's
yeah,
it's interesting.
And then even a couple pages later, where the art gets a little bit brighter, and Diana is kissing the corpse of Alethea after everyone has left. They are at the bottom of that full page, and the art in the rotunda, I think they're in. Even then, the there's stars above inside the rotunda, and the columns pull your eye down to where they are. Like, it's not just that page, but you're definitely right. In the last dozen or so pages, there's a lot of downward lines, a lot of downward movement.
The page after we see Diana leave the rotunda has Hippolyta, and her dress like divides the page, even though she's really only in the middle panel. But Hippolyta really splits the page there in an interesting way.
Yeah. Good notice, David.
Until Jen started talking about the tone shift, I looked back and I thought, oh yeah, that's totally true. Like every time we see, like for the rest of the book after Hippolyta, you know, holds Diana, every time we see Hippolyta's dress, it's always like pulled down on the ground, except for where she's holding it up as she walks down the stairs. But that's just like one quick panel. It's really interesting.
I have to say though, my favorite scene in this, my favorite scene by far, is the very end when she's putting on the armor and the different pieces of her gear. Like there's a tradition, especially in classical literature, of like the armoring of the hero. Sometimes it's I think it's in the Odyssey. There's like a really big description of his shield, or it might be in the Iliad. I don't remember. But in one of those, there's like a 3-page description of the guy's shield and the detail on it and what each piece means. And then the armoring, like the bracers go on. Like, it's a big deal what the armor means, because it's a representation. It's an outward representation of what the hero and what the character represents and what they stand for in the story. And this at the end, oh, it's fantastic. It's like masterful, because every piece has a meaning. And every piece's meaning is a reflection on Diana and how far she's come, and the journey that she's going to take ahead of her in terms of atonement as well. So it's like it's the things that she has won, and also the burdens that she now has to carry. And it's fantastic. I love it.
Like her tiara, like it totally, it becomes so much more than just part of her costume.
That's my favorite.
This, because it's like, you know, you earned this, now you have to wear it, you know?
Yeah. And you'll never forget how you got it.
Mm-hmm. Ugh. it's really interesting that there's all this, you know, there's all, we can find all this, all these, you know, all this stuff in this comic. And I remember at the beginning of our discussion, Jen commented that it's a simple story, and it really is. But I think that the way it's presented and combined with the art and stuff, it really, you know, this is a great example of an excellent comic, because everything that makes a comic, really comes together here and makes something special. We don't always get that. We don't get that in every comic. I mean, the great one, some of the best comics, I think, don't necessarily stand out because they're for being a good comic, but for being a good, a good story, or, like maybe the narration, the actual tale is good, but maybe the art's not. The art might be good, but it's not really like. It doesn't mesh necessarily in the same way that it does here. Mm-hmm. Something about like this comic really is the sum of its parts. Everything comes together to make something really special.
Yeah. Yeah, and I like back to the point of it being a simple story. And what this compares with other comics too. This is like the basic structure for a tragedy, and a classical Greek tragedy. That is just the at the end, the characters are in a position of damned if you do, damned if you don't. Like there's no way to move forward. That's a victory. There's no way that you get out of this without sadness. And a lot of comics and a lot of stories, a lot of narrative literature, all this kind of stuff today tries to add complexity through grittiness or through romantic subplots and all this kind of stuff. And there's enough room in these pages to do that. There was enough room to do that. But Jill Thompson decided not to do that and decided to tell the purest version of this story. And some of those other things that other people throw in to kind of add complexity, maybe not artificially, but, just kind of beef up a comic. Those things are kind of in here in a subtle way. There's hints that maybe Diana would have felt more for Alethea, that she feels more for Alethea than simple friendship. And there's bits of that in here, but that's for you to come to and for you to read into it as a reader. Because the story, like you're saying, is simple, but it's also pure, and it tells the best version of what it's trying to tell. Without, like, making it gritty or doing, like, there's no, like, oh, let's do it in noir style, and no, just do this and do it purely the best way you can. And I think that's what makes this a really good comic.
It has a laser focus on what it's telling, and I think it's all the better for that.
Yeah, it's one page what happens after she leaves. It's three panels. Oh, yeah, by the way, she went on adventures. Because that doesn't matter for this story. This story is just about how she leaves the island. And you don't have to do anything past that. Well, do you guys want to rate this? Do we have anything else to talk about? Alethea? Hippolyta? Poor Hippolyta.
I don't know. I think I'm okay to rate it now. You guys?
Same.
I just want to say, poor Hippolyta, that sucks so much. You longed for baby for so long. You finally have one. It grows up fast, especially fast compared to the fact that you've been alive for thousands of years. And if Diana's, grows at the rate of a normal human, that must seem like a blink of an eye. And then this happens, and like that, like Diana is the character we're following here, but Hippolyta is the tragic figure. Like there's no way Hippolyta doesn't come out of this completely and utterly heartbroken. Anyway, David, how about you go first?
Alrighty. Considering what I just said before, I don't think I can give this anything other than like 5. Like I said, I think that this comic really is something special. It's a superhero comic in that it's about Wonder Woman, but it's a lot more than that. It's a great story, and the art is beautiful, and everything works together really well. So, sometimes we talk about, is this a good comic to like introduce somebody to Wonder Woman? I think this is, anybody who likes stories should read this comic. It's just excellent. I can't say anything. I can't find anything bad to say about it. I mean, part of me was thinking, oh, maybe it could be longer, but no. I think it does. it does exactly what it needs to do in the space that it occupies as is. So, yeah, I'm giving this one a 5.
Yeah, and I mean, you talk about recommending this to people. Like, this is one. As soon as I was done reading, I was like, I need to make my wife read this, because my wife likes the idea of the character of Wonder Woman, but there's not a good like way in. There's different origin storytellings, but like, I'm not gonna give her New 52 Wonder Woman. Like, there's baggage there, or like, you know, now Rebirth Wonder Woman. There's baggage. Like, there's so many layers of baggage in a lot of the tellings of Wonder Woman's origin, and just a lot of Wonder Woman stories. And this is completely baggage free, but magnificently done. And I love the way that, like, the writing too. I mean, we talk about the art and we talk about the structure of the story, but like, the writing, I think that's what really got me, is you start reading this and it, the tone of the writing, the vibe of it comes off like somebody telling you a story, in an oral tradition kind of a way. Exactly the way that Odyssey and Iliad would have been handed down before Homer wrote them down. So this feels like I could be sitting there and somebody's singing me this poem, kind of a thing, you know? So it's great, because like, it's modern, but it has the feel and homages of the roots of classical Greek stuff. And yeah, I'm going to give it 5. I mean, I don't know how you don't. Right? Jen?
5. It's just, it's really good. I would not hesitate to hand this to someone. And, you know, I think a question that you guys have asked in the past of comics that feature like a female main character, especially a younger one, is would I hand this to my daughter someday? And I don't have kids, but if I did, I would say, yeah. Like, I feel like this is such a kind of universal comic. You don't need to be, you know, a big comics buff. You don't need to know all the history and the canon. And like that, you know, that applies to adults and kids. Like, this is just such a good, like, introduction to Wonder Woman. I feel like it would even be like a really good introduction to the medium. Like, say, like, here's a comic book. And it's just such a good story. I think there's a lot of like heart in it, and it's really just beautifully done in terms of the art, the writing, the storytelling itself. Like, this is really good. So 5.
Yeah, you talk about giving this to a kid. I think what makes kid stories good for kids and what makes them universal is the motivation comes from within the hero and within their story. And not from an outside force. So, like, take Avatar: The Last Airbender. Sure, he has to go and defeat the Fire Lord, and that's like the comet at the end and all that kind of stuff. But the journey, the hero's journey, is about Aang coming to terms with the fact that he ran away and that this war is all his fault, and he has to accept what he has done. And move on and live with himself and grow from that. And I like that in this, there's a similar kind of a thing. The only outside motivator, the only thing outside of Diana and even outside of the Amazons that moves anything forward is Heracles in the beginning. And he's just being a dick. And that guy is gone after page 15 of the ebook, which includes the cover and shit. So Heracles is in this for like, I don't know, 8 pages, the whole Heracles and Zeus thing. And after that, there's no excuses, right? Because I feel like that, like, when children read books and when children interact with the world, the bias that we all have as humans to blame external factors on what we do, exists amplified in kids. Like, it's never, shit's never gonna be my daughter's fault. She's always gonna have something else to blame it on. But this comic removes those. There's nothing to blame this on except herself. And I mean, we as adults can look at this and see, and the comic brings it up too, that this isn't just Diana's fault that she is this way. It's also her parents' fault. Which then, as a kid story, have some perspective on why your parents have to discipline you. Cause if you don't, this is what you become. Like, they have to do this. And I think because kids are come from a place of that sort of, order giving, they kind of understand that dynamic. So it's kind of, they're going to read that in this comic and just be, all right, yeah, that's the way the world works. you accept authority. So then it's all just on Diana. There's no outside excuses here. Diana did this and it is her fault and there's no fucking way around it. Yeah, that's what makes it. Yeah. I even thought about it as giving two kids, but now that you've brought it up, I can't unsee that. So yeah, five. So that was a awesome way to start our Wonder Woman 75 series with a straight up five across the board. We're going to go next week with The Legend of Wonder Woman by Renee DeLiz. This one, I have no idea what we're going for. I know this one, I know True Amazon was an origin story. I don't know what Legend of Wonder Woman is, but I know it's on all of the best Wonder Woman stories now. That's the thing, is like all four of these that we're doing came out just last year, and all four of them are like immediately on the best Wonder Woman stories of all time list. So hopefully it'll just be fives across the board. But that's next week. Until then, you can go to welcometocomics.com. On the left, there's a button that says Future Shows. Click on that. It shows what we have coming up. There's past shows. You can listen to our previous 291 episodes. There's a link to the Patreon there, patreon.com/welcometocomics. If you go there, you can become a patron, support the show. If you become a patron for at least a penny, you get access to a bonus episode about once a month. There's little perks above that. So if you want to, you know, chip in for a little bit more and support us, let us know that you like the show. Then you get a little bit something extra, a little something, something on the side. You know what I'm saying? but really, just go check it out. See what's there. If you decide not to chip in, that's fine. That's cool. You went and you looked, and I can't begrudge you not paying, because there's a lot of podcasts I listen to, but I can't pay for them all. I can't give them all Patreons. But if you want to go and take a look at ours and chip in a penny, then we'll at least know that you appreciate us and you like us. And that's something, if nothing else. Anyway, fives are on the board this week. True Amazon. Next week, Legend of Wonder Woman by Renee DeLiz. Until then, everybody, goodbye.
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 Yeah.